You know, when we sacrifice for the betterment of our relationships for so long, eventually we start to get ticked off about it. We get resentful and bitter. And this comes out in how our relationships function, whether it's with our partner or our kids. I think it can affect our sex life. Like, there's so many areas. And I think our physical bodies are really struggling.
You're listening to Love and Libido with me, your host, Dr. Emily Jamia. The goal of this podcast is to educate and inspire. My hope is that you will learn tools to create connection and cultivate passion, both within yourself and in your relationships. Here's what's coming up on today's episode.
Are you a mother or partner of a mother who feels like your relationship has gone downhill since kids entered the scene? You love your partner and you love your kids, but you feel like you've lost yourself somewhere along the way. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Our sexuality is inextricably linked to our individuality. Without a strong sense of self, your relationship and sex life is going to suffer. So how can we love our kids without losing ourselves and still find time for love and romance in the mix? That's the topic of today's episode. Dr. Morgan Cutlip, who has a PhD in psychology and is a highly sought-after relationship expert, knows what it feels like to lose yourself in motherhood, and she's determined to help mothers navigate it better. Throughout her career, she has helped hundreds of thousands of people worldwide learn how to form and maintain healthy relationships. Dr. Morgan has been a featured relationship expert with Good Morning America, Teen Vogue, The New York Times, Women's Health Magazine, MOPS International, Loveology, and Flow, which is the number one app in health and fitness. Her new book, Love Your Kids Without Losing Yourself, is available now.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. My inbox is flooded with DMs on a daily basis with people just like you who want help with their sex and relationship issues. I wish I had time to answer all of your questions, but luckily other resources are available. Look, without healthy relationships and a calm mind, being truly happy and at peace is hard. The good news is help is available. You deserve to be happy, and now you don't have to worry about finding an in-person therapist near you. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Join the millions of people who are seeing what online therapy is really about. And as a special offer to Love and Libido listeners, you can get 10% off your first month of professional therapy at betterhelp.com/Dr. Emily. That's betterhelp.com/Dr. Emily. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode.
Hello, Dr. Morgan. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Thank you. I'm so happy to have you here. We were just chatting before I hit record. I have been such a fan of your work for so long. I think you are such an important voice for mothers who are struggling to kind of find themselves while they're trying to balance everything else going on in their life. So thank you for all the work that you do. I'm so excited to chat with you today.
It's so humbling when people say that. I'm just glad you've been there and you find it enjoyable. Just thanks for saying that. So nice.
Of course. So before we dive into all of the wonderful things that you have to say, I would love to learn a little bit more about you and how you got into the field and about your journey.
Yeah. So my journey goes all the way back to elementary school. My dad is in the same profession. He has his doctorate in psychology. And he went back and got his doctorate when I was in maybe, first or second grade. And so I started going to classes with him from a pretty young age. And I know I would just like pack those doctor kits, you're probably too young for this, that were those old plastic briefcases. Mm-hmm. So I had one like that. I would pack it full of markers and paper and candy, and I would sit in class with him and take notes. And this just was like such a fond memory for me. And we would also play this game where he would give me hypothetical cases and I would try to solve them and talk about, what's going on with the family. How would you help the boy? What would you do? And so I feel like in many ways I grew up in the field of psychology. I was probably a social experiment by him. And then after he had a practice for a number of years, he started writing courses. And this was before everybody had a course. And I would travel around with him when he teaches the courses and help him. And eventually started speaking with him. So fast forward many, many years, was like, okay, well, this is what I love, what I want to do, but I need my own credentials if I'm going to have my own career path. And so got my master's and my doctorate and all the things. And I remember probably my sophomore year in college riding in the car with my dad. And I said, you know, someday I want to do something to help women. Mm. And we worked a lot with singles. So I always imagined it would be around dating. But I wasn't sure. Fast forward again to our daughter, Effie, being born. She's 10 now, which is bananas. But, and I just could not believe how hard motherhood smacked me in the face. I could not believe how just like that intense loss of freedom really struck me, feeling overwhelmed, feeling like I thought I'd be really good. And why do I feel like I suck at this? Regularly falling short, the anxiety. Oh my gosh, the anxiety. I was not used to that. And the resentment in my relationship. And I was like, you know what? This is what I'm going to do. At some point, I'm going to come out of this crazy fog of motherhood. And I don't know the answers, but I know I have the skill sets to figure this out. You know, my work has been in taking psychological theory and research and translating it into practical tools. That's what I've been doing. So I knew I could help moms navigate motherhood from a more empowered stance. So that's my story. That's why I'm where I'm at.
And it's so interesting hearing your story as the daughter of a psychologist, because I think too, I'm sure you're doing the same thing as a parent to your own kids. I think about when I talk to my daughter about what I do, and I'll ask, you know, she asks me questions and I'll say, well, you know, I help moms and dads have better relationships. And mm-hmm. she's like, what is their problem? And I'll say things like, well, sometimes they can't really agree on what restaurant to go to. And one wants to go for sushi and one wants to go to Italian. And I'll ask her, I'm like, so what would you do in that situation? How would you help them? And she's like, Mama, they just need to play rock, paper, scissors.
Actually, sometimes they do. Yeah.
Sometimes it's just the simple things that work the best.
That's so sweet. I'm sure she'll remember that forever.
I know. But yes, motherhood is just so complex this day and age. And it's such a paradox. You know, I see it in my practice all the time. I think that on the one hand, women have more freedom and opportunity than ever before, but with that comes such responsibility and higher expectations and a lot more pressure. So I'd love for you to just talk about that and kind of hear your two cents on the whole thing.
You know, I haven't been asked this question, and I think it's a really good question. And I guess I could just kind of share some rambles on it, but I think it's like right what you're saying is that we live in a day and age where moms sort of are told that we can have it all, that we can do it all, we can have it all, and we cannot feel the weight of it all. And it's this complete myth that we can actually juggle all the things without feeling some sort of consequences as a result. And I think it's wonderful that we have all these choices. And I think also there's this dark side, as exists with so many things, which is that all the choices then leave room for us to question our choices and to feel guilt about our choices and to feel like since we have the choice, we have to take advantage of the choice. So we need to do all the things, be all the things, you know, not just a stay-at-home mom. I got to have a side hustle too, you know, or I got to, you know, oh gosh, these people are starting these Instagram accounts. I should do that too. And I think that it's like, it's a blessing, but we have to really be honest with ourselves around the costs, which is that we're spread really thin. Mm-hmm. When we're spread thin, we are really excellent at volunteering to be the first ones to go on the back burner. And I think moms are really paying a significant price for this. And we're seeing that conversation being had so much more, which I think is really, really important.
Yeah. And what would you say that price is? Is it obviously, I'm sure, a toll on mental health, a toll on relationship health? What kinds of issues do you see the most?
I think all of it. I think, you know, emotional health in the sense that we're burnt out, we're overwhelmed. We feel like, you know, we can't catch our thoughts. We're losing our creative juices. We feel like we move so fast. We can't soak up the moments of joy and slowness. Like we're all like trying to find slow. We got to be taught how to find slow. I think that just this experience of spinning through our life is really exhausting and draining. I've talked to moms who say, and I know this feeling too, of feeling like an elephant is kind of like on your chest at all times. Just that's the weight of the world.
Feeling of just bracing for
the this tension. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a piece of it. Our mental health, anxiety rates are higher, you know, depression. I think moms are experiencing burnout at record rates. I think that our relationships suffer because when we, you know, when we sacrifice for the betterment of our relationships for so long, eventually we start to get ticked off about it. We get resentful and bitter. And this comes out in how our relationships function, whether it's with our partner or our kids. I think it can affect our sex life. Like, there's so many areas. And I think our physical bodies are really struggling. Yeah. I feel like I'm seeing like more colleagues of mine, and I'm right in this camp too, share about their gut health journeys. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, that's not their niche, but all of a sudden it's entering into their, just kind of their story. And that's part of my story. And it's like, well, you know, why are women suffering at such high rates of this autoimmune disease and of physical health issues? And I think part of it is our pace. Our stress is never ending. And we are really good at ignoring the signals from our bodies and just charging forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're spot on with everything you say. And, you know, I specialize in sex and relationships, and I have so many women who complain about being unable to focus during sex, to get inside their body. And I love what you said about spinning through life, because I'm like, well, no wonder. How can you expect to go from 100 miles an hour all day long, where you're multitasking, you have split attention, to then recenter and focus on the single act of sex and emotional connection, and also hopefully get some physical pleasure from it? Like, that's just not a realistic goal. And so I'm constantly encouraging people to just slow down, learn when to say no, to do one thing at a time. But why do you think that is so hard for women these days?
I think some of these messages are so, it's like, slow down, do one thing at a time, you know, take some deep breaths. Like, all of these things are genuinely helpful. But we are being told this over and over again from different, you know, whatever, social media, television, all these different areas of life are sort of suggesting these things that I think we've sort of numbed out a little to them. We sort of nod our head and we're like, okay, great. And we're like, whatever, you know, whatever. Is it actually going to move the needle? And it's like, well, yeah, probably a little bit. And then you can get some momentum and do some more things. But I think part of it is we struggle to actually do the things that will help us, because we are tired of hearing it. We don't think it's actually going to do anything meaningful. Yeah. I think the other reason we keep swirling through life is our plates are genuinely really full. And I think that there is just, you know, we value productivity so much in our culture. It's really hard to jump off that train. And it feels a little bit like, if we're not doing it, who's doing it? Somebody's got to do it. And so I think that we, you know, and there's truth to these things. And then there's also, I think, a little bit more wiggle room than sometimes we allow ourselves to entertain. But yeah, I think we struggle to let some of these things go and to make some shifts.
Do you think this is an issue primarily for American women, or do you see the same thing happening in like Western Europe or, you know, other places? I'm curious, because I have a sense that it's like the worst here, but I'm curious. Yeah, what you think.
I think it's the worst here. I mean, I don't know for sure. So I'm speaking now just from straight opinion. I don't know for sure, but I did a reel about part of our conversation, but I got in this conversation with one of my friends who grew up in Denmark, and we were talking about mental load. And, you know, she's like, it just doesn't really exist. Like, it just doesn't. She's like, I don't know how to explain it. It's so strange. She goes, but you know, if somebody were offered, you know, if somebody were offered a bunch of money or a bunch more vacation, 99% of the time they're taking vacation. I was like, oh, that's just not really how we function. Mm-hmm. She's like, productivity is not the main focus. You know, there are systems that make being with your family a bit easier, more financially feasible. And she said, it's really interesting. She goes, I'm probably not a really good housewife. And my husband will tell me that sometimes. And she goes, and I don't really care, because I got a lot of things going on. Yeah. And so my house won't always be the cleanest. And I feel zero guilt about it, because that's fine. And so I think there's a mentality there that they have that we don't really have. And then the other thing she said is, and I've known her a long time, and this is absolutely true. She goes, I just move really slow.
Yeah.
And then she goes, I eat slowly. I walk slowly. I talk slowly. And I'm like, yes, you do. Like, yes, you do. She goes, some American people find it really annoying. And I was like, I get it. Cause I'm like, fast, fast, fast. Okay. And she goes, but it's better for my body. It's better for my soul. It's better for my mind. Yeah. And I just, she goes, what's the hurry? Mm-hmm. And I think that it's such a small shift. It's becoming a little cliche, but it's meaningful and it matters. And I think it makes a difference in how we feel in our day-to-day life.
Yeah. And it's funny you say your friend is from Denmark, because the whole time you're talking, I think about conversations I have with a good friend of mine who's from Sweden, and he's never had social media. And, you know, I love doing things with her because I just like instantly feel relaxed around her.
Yes.
There is not that sense of just rushing around and flitting through life. Her phone, like, it'll take her like days to get back to me with a text message, but it's her phone is like always on airplane mode, or she has her notification silenced. And she's like, yeah, my husband gets mad at me because he can't reach me during the day, but like, I just need the quiet time. And I'm like, bravo for just setting that boundary and savoring your time. I mean,
it's like a bit unapologetic, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. It is unapologetic. Yeah. Like I know she's going to get back to me, and I know it probably won't be for a couple of days. And I really admire her. admire that about her.
It's so hard to do because it's so countercultural here.
Yes,
it's so against the grain, but I do think that some of these mindset shifts are really powerful. We just like all need to get on board with it.
I know. We'll just all move to Scandinavia. So you write and talk extensively about the mental load. Can you explain that for people who might not be familiar with that term?
Yeah. So the mental load is the invisible running to-do list that typically it's not always, I'll get those rogue male followers who are like, this is me. And I'm like, then you're welcome here. Hang out. Like, but I'm still going to talk to women, but mostly women manage, and it's all sorts of things. It's like the remembering of things, the keeping stock of the household. It's the research of things, the emotional work, thinking about, you know, oh, our kid's struggling with this. I need to figure out what we're going to do. And there's a couple key features of the mental load that make it really just, I don't know, powerful in our lives. And one's that it takes up cognitive real estate. Mm-hmm. So it crowds out other stuff. I'm sure you talk about this with your clients in sex, because it needs to be talked about more. Way that it affects women's ability to feel in the mood, to even get in a sexy state of mind, to even entertain it, is like, it's so crowded with running lists of things to do. The other thing is that it's invisible. So I kind of said that already, but this is so important, because one of the things I hear most often from my community is, I just can't get my partner to understand what it is. And part of the reason why is because it's invisible. It's like stuff just magically happens and gets done. And so we're like trying to explain this to them. And it seems silly sometimes, like, oh, well, I have to, you know, give the dog his pill, and I have to like fold the blankets on the couch, and I have to remember the toilet paper. And they're like, okay, make a list, right? It seems silly. Right. But it covers such vast territory that it's like you couldn't almost not put it all on paper or express it all to your partner. So it becomes really frustrating. And then the third piece is that a lot of the tasks are ongoing. So as soon as you finish it, you're right. It's like laundry, you know, great, you got the laundry done. Here's another load, you know? And so it feels like it's never ending. There's not like a, you know, that feeling of satisfaction of a job well done and completed. And so this is another, that doesn't fit every area of the mental load, but for the most part, the mental load doesn't have an end point. And that feels really, I think, oppressive sometimes to women.
And now a quick break for a word from our sponsors. Is emotional and physical intimacy a challenge in your relationship? Do you long for the feeling you had in the honeymoon phase? You're not alone. I've created a tried and true method for reinvigorating your relationship. My private online workshop takes an innovative yet scientifically based approach to teaching you the tools to cultivate passion and create connection that lasts. Visit emilyjamia.com/workshop for your free trial. I am so confident that you'll have a positive outcome that I've created a 100% money-back guarantee. You really have nothing to lose. And if that's not reason enough, subscribers to my podcast get 50% off. Subscribe to the show and use code HALFOFF at checkout. Offer expires at the end of the week. Visit emilyjamia.com/workshop today. And now, back to the episode. What is your advice to women about how to start sharing some of that and talking to their partner about how to take some of that on?
It feels like this is a lot. Okay, if I boil it down, I think one of the most important things is having conversation around it. And that is the least sexy answer because people don't want to talk about it. Or women will say, oh, you're just adding more to my mental load by suggesting I talk about it. And I really understand that. I understand that. But at the same time, if we want something to shift, we got to, you know, what do you do then? We got to do something about it. And so I think one of the most important things is regularly talking about it. So not just having the one conversation where your partner gets defensive and you're like, screw it, I'll just keep doing this stuff, you know, but really pushing through, working through some of the defensiveness. I actually created a free guide for people to have this conversation because I feel so strongly about how important it is, and to help navigate that defensiveness if it shows up. So getting through that and then getting to a place where it becomes normal to talk about it. I think people should schedule it on their calendars, like once a week, maybe. Once a month, but once a week, probably, to talk about just the mental load. The reason is it changes constantly. Mm-hmm. If you're sick, the mental load shifts, you know, in terms of who can do what. My partner travels almost every week. I carry the mental load most of the time, but when he comes home, we're talking about what's going to be shifting so I can get a minute. Mm-hmm. And so getting good at talking about it, normalizing that it's just part of a relationship. To have these check-ins. It's not that necessarily something's wrong with us.
Right.
It's just a normal part of the day-to-day. So I think that's one of the key things when it comes to shifting it.
I totally agree. And to your point, yeah, it's not always the most romantic or sexy part of the conversation of the relationship, but like it or not, there is a business element to running 100%. A successful relationship. And I think that just like anything else that's important in your life, you have to sit down and tend to it. And so mm-hmm. that means I'm a huge fan of regular check-ins. And I'm going to actually add a mental load category to my couple check-ins.
You should.
That I give to people because I think it is really important because a lot of times, and I think we're talking primarily about heterosexual couples, but mm-hmm. men aren't thinking about, okay, what do I need to do to plan for the next birthday party? Or, you know, yes, you could give them a grocery list, but they're not really doing the meal planning. It's like the Christmas gifts, all of that stuff. And anything you can do, I think, to not have to make a list to say, okay, you are responsible for, let's say, medical and dental from now on, or you are responsible for doing the party planning, like just to delegate as much as possible and then let them take the initiative to put it on their calendar and make it happen, I think is a really good step.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in the beginning, there might be some massive renegotiating going on. And then over time, your meeting is just kind of like, okay, what's going on? What shifts do we need to make? Can you pick this up this week? And I'll step in here, you know, but I think part of the renegotiation might be handing off pretty big tasks that the other person owns in totality. So mm-hmm. it's not just like, okay, so you do the grocery shopping, but I'll make the list and also cook it and do all of the things. So what can you hand off that is a whole job? And I mean, it sounds like common sense, but we don't often think about these things. So think about what you each like to do and what you're good at. I've actually years ago came across, I don't remember what podcast it was, but I heard someone interviewed and they talked about how the wife was always in charge of finding the babysitter. Mm-hmm. For some reason, she had to ask her husband to do it. And so if you think about how you find a babysitter, you text one and then you like wait for a response and then you're like, shoot, they can't do it. Okay, I'll text on my backup sitter. And it takes forever to figure it out. So he did like Russian roulette and he texted all the sitters on a group text. It was like, whoever gets back to me first wins.
Yeah.
And she's like, I had no idea, but he's so much better at that than me. Right. And so that became his thing. And so think about that stuff. When you hand off tasks, it doesn't need to be like you doing all the things you hate. It might be something your partner's good at and really loves to do.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, and I think this goes especially for American women, need to lower expectations for themselves a little bit. You know, there is so much out there that not only does it have to be, you know, organic, it also has to be Instagram worthy. And I think of the birthday, like the past couple birthday parties we've done, it's like a cake from the local grocery store and like a run to Party City. And it's, everyone still has a great time. The kids have no clue. And I'm like, I don't need to have this big, fancy, like Instagram worthy birthday party for the kids. It doesn't really make that much of a difference. But I think there is such like a competitiveness now for women and having the flashiest and the biggest. Like, what is your advice for people on maybe lowering expectations? And what are some reasonable areas in life that they can lower expectations aside from like birthday parties?
I mean, I think birthday parties is a great place to start. Yeah. Oh, it's funny. Back to this conversation with my Danish friend. I'm like, she's like a wealth of knowledge, but she talked about birthday parties and she was saying in our country, they're focused on the togetherness and not on the production. Right. It's like, what a nice shift to, for us to really embody and to take into things. So, I mean, I think it's really tricky with expectations in part because we live in a, you know, a time where social media is just regularly bombarding us with people who already have their porches decorated for fall, who are like already, we got my Christmas presents bought already. Like all of the things we feel like we're really falling short on. And so I think sometimes it's really helpful when it comes to expectations to identify them. You know, what are my expectations? A lot of times we operate with them impacting us in powerful ways, but we don't really even know what they are. So we have expectations of ourselves as mothers that really need unpacking and like put on the table. Because when we shed light on stuff, we have then the opportunity to really make some changes in how we do things. Even in our relationship with our partner, you know, we have all these expectations that likely were never really unearthed until we had kids.
Yeah.
You know, like expectations of what my partner will be like as a parent, what my partner will be like as a parent, or as a partner after they become a parent. Like I had all these expectations about how I'd be treated when I was pregnant. No, I thought I was being like foot rubs, I'm China doll over here, fragile woman who needs like pampered. Yeah. That was really not my experience.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Same here.
Oh my gosh. Like we don't even know those exist in us, those expectations, mm-hmm. really. I mean, but all of a sudden when we become a mom, when we become pregnant, I think is when they start kind of creeping out. And it's because our entire life, we have been absorbing messages about what it means to be a mother, what motherhood will look like, what will look like in motherhood, all of these things. And so I think putting them on the table, examining them and being like, you know what, that doesn't work for me, and making some changes and deciding, because it's such an individual choice how you shape your expectations. And so it's hard to be prescriptive around that one. But when you examine them, you have the power to do something about them.
Yeah. And I think it's so important that people always ask themselves, like, what is it that's important and meaningful about this? Mm-hmm. Whatever choice that may be. Like, for example, my daughter just started kindergarten, and I can't tell you, you know, I went back and forth on whether I should sign up to be one of the room mothers. And at the end of the day, I was like, you know what? I saw the list. I saw the sign up when we went for Meet the Teacher, and I just walked right past it. It's like, you know what? This is our first year in the school. I don't have to take a leadership role right away. Let me take a back seat and people can delegate to me, and I'm happy to, you know, do what needs to be done, but I don't necessarily need to be the one signing up for everything. And just making that little decision was really empowering for me, because I'm like, I can still here for a field trip or do this or that, but I don't need to be the one like drafting the emails and organizing the events and doing this or that. Because I think what is meaningful for me is that, yes, my daughter see that I'm there participating in some of the school functions, but she's not going to know that I'm not like PTO president, you know?
No. And like a lot of times when we aren't aware, I mean, it's so great you could do that without the guilt. Yeah. I think a lot of times people either do what you did and feel terrible about it, or they'll have an expectation of themselves and they'll live in accordance with it, but then they'll resent it. They're mm-hmm. typing those emails like, oh, I got to manage this other event, or I got to do this thing, or I can't believe. And it's like, okay, so that's great. You're living up to your expectations, but now you're really bitter about it. So it's time to make some adjustments because they're not serving you. And I think a lot of times when we operate with this stuff out of our awareness, we behave in certain ways that end up fueling feelings of frustration and resentment or the guilt if we don't live in accordance to them. So it's, yeah, got to make those changes.
I'm not saying the choice was totally guilt-free, but it didn't allow it to overwhelm me.
I think that's a good place to be.
I'm done. So, yeah. And I do think it's really important to take stock of what is going to be the most meaningful to you personally and then acknowledge that, you know, maybe providing healthy meals is really important for your family. And if that's really important for you, like make that your focus, or maybe volunteering at the school is really important to you. And if so, make that your focus. But I think it's important to take stock and even like sit down, make a list and kind of go through each area and scale, like on a scale from 0 to 10, like how important and meaningful is this going to be? How much is this going to fill my cup versus how much is this going to drain and deplete me? And then start making choices and know that. I love the quote. I don't know who originally said it, but it's like, yes, you can have everything, but not all at once. Maybe one year you focus on one thing and another year you focus on something else. But I think that a lot of people have to know, you know, when and how and where they can trim the fat off things that maybe just aren't serving them or that they don't have the capacity to do.
Yeah, I think we're like even venturing into talking about priorities, because it's like it all starts to sort of connect, like our expectations, and then that guides how we prioritize things. But, you know, I think that that's a really common experience in motherhood, is where our priorities just like almost day to day conflict, you know, and we might have these higher order priorities of like family and our being a great mom and all these things that are regularly butting heads with urgent demands of life. And so I walked past my volunteer sheet too. And I actually really like to volunteer, but also I homeschool and they only go to a learning academy a couple of days. So it's like, am I going to volunteer on my couple of days? Right. You know? And so part of it is like sort of these like negotiations with yourself, which is that, you know, okay, where are my values? What are my higher order values? What are the urgent demands? What are the demands of the season of life? Mm-hmm. And like, what can I, like you said, what feels good to me? What can I live with? You know, and where can I trim this fat and actually feel like I'm still, you know, the woman, the partner, the mom that I want to be. And I think that there's absolutely ways for us to do this really mindfully.
Totally, totally. The title of your book is, remind me the title of your book.
Yeah, Love Your Kids Without Losing Yourself.
Love Your Kids. I knew it was without losing yourself. So talk about that, because I think there is such an identity loss that happens through motherhood. And it's such a paradox, because at the same time, you have this whole new part of your identity, but everything else can kind of fall in the shadows. So what are some key takeaways from the book?
So the big picture takeaway is that moms are these really amazing managers of all of the people and all of the things, but we don't really turn the same skill sets very well toward ourselves. And so we're caring for all our other relationships while we are put on the back burner. And so I encourage moms in the book to mother themselves like they mother their kids. And the shorthand version is go mom yourself, which I hope people can like easily remember to do that. And so I teach moms how to do regular self check-ins, and I give a model of relationship that they do. That's how they like frame their self check-in. There's 5 steps that they work through, and you can do it really fast. You can do it any amount of time it takes to like cut up a sandwich, to go to the bathroom. Hopefully you're going to the bathroom. Yes. Not holding your pee all day. You know, you can do it super quickly. And what it does for moms is it allows us to reconnect to ourselves, because we so easily lose ourselves in our relationships. We start to forget what we need. We get that moment alone and we're like, I don't even know what to do right now. I don't know what's going to move the needle. It helps you start to reconnect with yourself and also identify what are some potential areas of intervention that's not just getting my nails done or taking a bubble bath that will help me feel better in motherhood. And there's 2 things that can happen when you do the self-check-in. You can identify the area of intervention and you can take care of it right away, because I give practical tips. Or you might identify it and be like, I don't have time for this right now. Like, I can define the problem, but I don't have time to do the solution. Yeah. And if that's the case, I think that there is relief that's offered when we define something that's hard and that's painful. And so even if you just define the problem, put a pin in it for later, I think that offers some sort of relief. So either you address it then or you put a pin in it for later and know that you're coming back to you.
I love that. I think that's great advice. You know, one thing my husband and I always do is we make sure like every week he has a guy's night out. I have a girl's night out. Well, I have the option really to do what I want. If I want to like go off and do something, I could go to a movie by myself if I wanted to.
That's nice.
Go out with friends. And, you know, I think that is, it's something we've really done since even before having kids, because we were a little bit older when we got together and we had our friend groups and we kind of had things that we enjoyed and we didn't want to give that up. And so
yeah.
I think it's really important that couples sit down and see where and how and when they can carve out individual time to go get back in touch with themselves, whether that's going to get a massage or just spending time with friends, getting out of the house, getting out of that role as mother or father or husband or wife or whatever it may be, so that you can stay connected to all of the other parts of yourself that make you whole and vibrant.
Totally. As I think, I mean, in motherhood, especially, it's like we become mom. Like, I feel like I've introduced myself a lot lately as like, I'm Roy's mom. Like, I'm not even a person anymore. Right. You know? So yeah. I think it's so easy to do that. And I think, you know, what you and your husband do is so wonderful. I also think there's this huge mass amount of women who would feel bad about asking for that. Maybe their partners aren't as, you know, generous about offering it, aren't as like on board with this sort of stuff. And maybe they'll even their partners take the time, but they aren't willing to offer it to,
moms. I talk about it with my friends. I'm like, look, you have a friend who's also a marriage therapist. And I am telling you, like they have this overwhelming guilt about taking a night out. And I'm just like, let it go.
It's all the thing, right? Guilt about leaving the kids, guilt about putting their partner out, all of these things. And so I feel like, you know, in my book, it was a really high priority that I address some of these underlying pieces. Because if you're going to tell mom to do stuff to take care of herself, but she's got all these hangups, it's never going to happen. She's got to deal with those hangups too.
Totally, totally. Well, I could talk to you all day, but tell people where they can learn more about you and get your book.
So you can get my book wherever you buy books. I'm not sure when this is airing, but my book comes out September 19th. So if you pre-order early, you get a bunch of gifts. And so you can find out about that on my website, drmorgancutlip.com. And then you can find everything about me pretty much on my Instagram, which is drmorgancutlip as well.
Awesome. And I will be sure to link everything in the show notes. Definitely go get a copy. I think it's going to be a really great book. I know it's going to be a great book, not just for women to read, but hopefully for them to share little snippets with their partners as well. Because sometimes if they won't listen to you, they'll listen to an expert. So,
it's so true. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course, it's always a pleasure. And hopefully we can talk again soon.
I hope so.
Thanks again for listening to Love and Libido with me, your host, Dr. Emily Jamia. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and drop me a 5-star review. Share with a friend who might find it interesting. As much as we can learn from experts, nothing makes us feel more connected than hearing from each other. If you have a story that relates to today's episode or just a general question about sex or your relationship, visit loveandlibido.com and I'll share it on an upcoming episode. Be sure to visit my website, emilyjamia.com, to see my latest blogs and to check out my online workshop. Subscribers to my podcast can use code HALFOFF. Finally, you can follow me across all the social media channels for daily sex and relationship tips at Dr. Emily Jamia. Thank you so much for tuning in.